Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency. Sustainability and food security matters. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. Today, we're going to be doing our 4 before for July, 4 things to do before the end of July. And as always, it's going to be, you know, with a view to just increasing our productivity and making things that little bit more productive throughout the rest of the year and maybe challenging ourselves a little bit to go a little bit further than we otherwise might. Before we get into that, I have a tiny bit of housekeeping to get to, and it's basically an apology. I'm so sorry to everyone who was checking their podcast feed furiously through Wednesday and Thursday, wondering where this Wednesday's podcast was. It's just an apology, and you know, it just didn't happen. It's the first time in well over a year of producing 3 podcasts a week, and at the start I was producing them every single day, and the first time I haven't been able to get one out. It's just been a really, really difficult few days for me in terms of my schedule and times, and I just genuinely didn't have time to record one. I mean, obviously I could have recorded one, I could have found time, but I would have had to, you know, pay a price that I just couldn't afford to pay this week. So I do apologize. I will try and make it up to you over the weekend with a bonus podcast, but I'm not making any promises, just because, you know, just like the rest of you guys, it's an incredibly busy time of year for me. So I'm struggling to tread water at the moment. Not a complaint. I think, you know, as I've said before, all of the problems I have at the moment are problems I've worked very, very hard to create for myself. So it's not a complaint, but it's just the state of things at the moment. So I do apologize. I for me, you know, I'm a massive podcast fan. I'm an avid podcast fan, and some of the podcasts I listen to don't have a release date, and it's just whenever they turn up in my feed, it's a lovely bonus. And some of them release on a very regular schedule, and when those regular scheduled podcasts don't arrive, I know how frustrating it can be. So I do apologize. I, you know, will always do my utmost to ensure the regular content arrival in your feeds, but obviously, you know, I am, you know, I'm just a man and I do what I can, and on this occasion it didn't quite work out. So last time, I will say it, but I do apologize. Right, let's get into today's show then. And today is our 4 things to do before the end of July. Now, this time, it's even more so than usual. It's really seasonal. So I apologize to our Southern Hemisphere listeners, but I do invite you all to kind of keep a log of where we are and maybe go back 6 months and listen to the one from 6 months ago. I don't think I started them 6 months ago, but in future, you know, the idea will be that there'll always be one from 6 months previous that will apply to you on some of the more seasonal items on our list. So today, the first thing on our 4 things to do before the end of July is to carry on sewing. Now, I know that I'm still really prone to this, but certainly in previous years, I've made the mistake of just completely stopping to sew things at some point in June, because it just feels like I've got so much happening and there's so much abundance in my garden and things are just, you know, all the space is full, and I just kind of take my eye off the ball and stop sowing things. And what happens is I end up with very bare patches in my garden when we get into the autumn and winter. There are patches that don't have anything to go in, or I'm taking things out and then I'm sewing, direct sewing, and then I'm having to wait for things to come on. So there's a bit of a delay, and it has an impact in what I'm able to harvest through the winter and the spring. So this year, I'm being much more diligent about that side of things. But it doesn't just have an impact on what you're harvesting in the spring and winter. It also has an impact on what you'll be harvesting at the end of the regular season, because there's still quite a lot to be succession sowing. Now, obviously, our fast maturing salad leaves, things like rockets and things like that, we can still and should still be succession sowing those, because there's so much season left. And if we stop succession sowing those, and we'll be able to do that for a little while still to come, then there's going to be a big patch of our year where we're not harvesting our lettuce leaves and rocket leaves when we could be. That's the first thing. The second thing is the other side of the succession sowing is our slightly less mature, slightly less quick to mature plants, but we can still get another round in if we're quick. We are running out of time, and it will depend where you are. If you're in the UK, for example, some of these things will just be in the sort of southern part of the UK is where people would generally recommend that you still be sowing them. But I recommend that you sow them a little bit past whenever is recommended anyway. Going back to my Grow More Food episode, you know, that works at both ends of the season. So taking a few risks and sowing things a little bit later than you might, it means that you're going to be in an opportunity to reap those rewards if we do get a really mild autumn or a really mild winter or a really late start to the winter. And, you know, you could find yourself in a position where the frosts just don't come for a month or two longer than you were expecting. But because you didn't sow things a little bit later than traditional wisdom would say you should, you don't have things that you could be harvesting. And I'm talking about things like beetroots and carrots, bush beans and peas, all those kinds of things. These are still things that, you know, we're thinking about putting our last sowings in now, but we can still be doing it. And like I say, it might put us in a position later in the year to be harvesting much later than we otherwise might with a lot of those things. So do take a risk, even if you are, for instance, in the north of the UK or in another temperate climate, which, you know, matches our climate in the north of the UK rather than the south, wherever you are. I know that my listenership is global, it's not local, but, you know, do take a few risks with those late sowings and, you know, just don't be shy, don't be scared. And if they fail, they fail. That's fine. That's absolutely okay. Next up, we're going to talk about harvesting. So the other end of the spectrum, we've got the sowing and the harvesting, and it's really important to be diligent with our harvesting and to be harvesting things like peas and beans really, really regularly, because that's what's going to promote the extra cropping, and you're going to get a much, much higher yield from your beans and your pea plants than if you don't regularly crop them. Because the plant, if you think about it from the plant's point of view, its entire goal in life is to create mature seed pods that it will then dry on the stem and which will eventually fall to the ground or be taken away and repropagate the species. That's its goal. That's its only real imperative. That's what it's trying to achieve. And if we continually crop them, it forces the plant to put its energy towards making more and more of those seeds, which are the bits we want, the peas and the beans. And this works with other plants as well. But like I say, regularly cropping is the reason we deadhead flowers. Flowers, obviously, are what's going to start forming seeds and the seed pods for next year. So if you regularly deadhead before they've had chance to form seed, you're going to get extra flowers. Well, the same thing applies for our legumes. It's also important to regularly crop things like your courgettes. Now, our courgettes are just starting. I don't know whether it will be today or tomorrow, but we're right on the edge of harvesting our first ever courgette, which is something I'm incredibly excited about. And of course, the reason you need to regularly harvest your courgettes is they will turn into marrows pretty quickly, which are a far less sought after cuisine. Now, if you want to grow marrows, obviously that's a completely different thing and you will want to leave some on there. But definitely from our point of view, we want to eat the courgettes, and a courgette is such a prolific cropper, we don't need to worry about the actual yield insofar as the weight of plant that we're harvesting. You know, obviously we'd get a little bit more yield per item if we left courgettes to turn to marrows, but we're not going to enjoy them nearly as much in the kitchen. And when it comes to yield, just a few plants is going to more than meet your needs, even if you're harvesting them really, really young. And again, you know, just a little bit of thought, and you can extrapolate this principle out to other things. Things like cucumbers, you know, make sure that you're regularly harvesting your cucumbers so that, again, the plant doesn't think it's done its job and is less intent on producing more and more of those fruits and subsequently seeds. So that's our first two. Sow something, carry on sowing. Please don't take your eye off the ball on that, as I have certainly been guilty of in previous years and I'm still guilty of now. I'm not sowing as much as I possibly could be. And harvesting, make sure that you're harvesting all the things that harvesting regularly is important for, and do it regularly. You can now support the show directly. Just go to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. You can become a patron and set up to donate to the show from any amount. Pledging as little as $3 a month makes a huge difference. If that's not your thing, you can also support the show by sharing it with people you know or posting about it on social media. We really appreciate all the help that you give us. It's people like you that make this show possible. Okay, so as always, we're going to list four things. We've done sowing and we've done harvesting. Next up is some fruit tree management. Now, there's lots to think about here. We're going to start with our, you know, just the really basic stuff. And that's to just have a look at your fruit trees and have a general think about their health. It's a bit late, really, to do your summer prune. I've done a series of episodes with Adam from Gardener's Tale on winter and summer pruning. So it's worth checking those out if you haven't already seen them or heard them. But we're not really talking about pruning our trees. We're talking about managing our trees and managing the fruit on them. So if you are lucky enough to be like I am and have several fruit trees that are just almost too prolific, then now's the time to have a look and have a think about managing that fruit production. We lost a bough from our pear tree last year because it was so laden. It was overladen with fruit and the weight of it literally brought down one of the boughs on the tree. So now's the time to thin out those fruits. So you'll want to take off any, you know, poor looking fruit, any that are smaller than the rest, that aren't looking like they're going to develop into nice big fruit, any that are damaged or misformed, and just have a check for signs of bugs and diseases. And like I say, just thin them out. It's going to allow your fruit to really come on fully and develop nicely, the ones that are left. You know, the tree's going to have its attention focused where it's required, and now's the time to do that. It's a great opportunity, and you might be surprised by the difference in yield. Not only the number of plants that actually, or the number of fruits that actually make nice big full fruits, but you know, the actual yield in total, you might be surprised that by thinning out, just like when we thin anything else, the benefits actually come across in the final yield as well. That's not to say you'll necessarily and you'll definitely get more kilograms of apples, but what you will have, a better fruit, more usable fruit, and less wastage. Now's the time to thin them out. And of course, those immature fruits can go either in the compost or to animals, depending on what animals you're keeping. So now's the time to have a look at your fruit trees. And if you do have some branches that are really overladen and, you know, look at risk of dropping, and I wish we'd done this last year, you can choose to just support them. If all the fruit on there look good and you don't want to do too much thinning, then of course you could just support the branch, support the bough. And you can do this in a number of ways. You can take some rope and tie it up to the trunk, or you can just support it underneath like you would the middle of a washing line. If you remember the old-fashioned washing lines we all had in our gardens, you'd put a stick in the middle, wouldn't you? You could do something like that. Now, next up, we're going to talk about moisture management. That's going to be the last one of our four things to do before the end of July. And we're going to start with a bit of an overlap and talk about fruit trees. Now, if you have planted fruit trees in the last 18 months and you're going through a dry spell, you might want to consider watering them, because depending on what you planted and how you planted them and how well they've established, they might not have quite such a large established root system as a mature plant will have. So it's definitely worth thinking about, do they need some moisture? So moisture management is the last of our four things to do before the end of July. So going back to the vegetable garden now, you're going to want to think about your thirstier plants, you know, your beans, your peas, your courgettes, pumpkins, tomatoes, cucumbers, all of those things, and just think about the water management. Now, If you've followed the advice on previous episodes and you've mulched your garden, as I have not quite done, I haven't been able to practice what I preach. I've tried, I've started, but I haven't finished, just haven't had the time. Then obviously that's going to help massively. If you haven't, then there's still time for it to make a huge difference. You know, it's never a bad time to mulch your beds. So go and add some mulch to those thirsty plants, even if that's all you've got time for. And what that's going to do is it's going to massively reduce the amount of moisture lost to the weather, lost through the top of your soil, and stop that top layer of soil drying out and becoming crispy. This is super important when you're planting out seedlings and things, because their roots are only going to have access to the very top part of that soil until they get established. So moisture management comes in many, many forms. You know, it can be as simple as watering your plants, but it also includes some soil management to help it retain that moisture. So mulching definitely would qualify for a big tick in this column. So we've spoken about, you know, which plants to think about requiring extra moisture, you know, beans, peas, courgettes, pumpkins, tomatoes and cucumbers. But some of them, you know, understanding the plant as well can be really beneficial. So things like tomatoes, we often talk about the watering techniques for tomatoes. You don't really want to be watering them every day. You want to water them every 2 or 3 days really, really deeply while they're getting established. This is less important after the plants are well established, because by doing that, by practicing those good watering principles while they're getting established, you're encouraging those roots to dive down where the moisture is going to be. If you're watering every day, there's always moisture on the top and the roots aren't necessarily encouraged to go quite so deep. But once they're already established, this obviously becomes less important, but it's still good practice, I think. Now, cucumbers, in my experience, you can't really overwater. So long as, again, you're giving them that really deep watering once their roots are established again, then it's a really good idea to just make sure that you're watering and watering and watering, because they need all that water to form all that fruit. You know, a cucumber is mostly water, as is most of the things that we're harvesting. So I suppose the best way of thinking about it, with so far as which plants need a lot of moisture, I'd be thinking, you know, how much am I actually cropping from the plant per week? So when you think about a lettuce, while you might be cropping quite a big amount, you're cropping it once. So spread out over the number of weeks that is in the ground, it's actually not nearly as much water as you might think when you're talking about cropping beans, where you're going to be taking a significant harvest every other day or every 3 days or whatever it might be for your scenario. So just think about the amount of moisture that you're effectively taking from the plant and bringing into your kitchen. That's the way I would suggest that you think about it. Now, of course, at this time of year, the moisture management is going to extend to things like pots. It's really, really important to probably water your pots every day in the summer when it doesn't rain, because they don't have the access to that groundwater. They don't have the opportunity, they don't have the choice to develop deep root systems that go down deep into the ground where that moisture is going to be retained more fully. But again, it's just another reason to mulch around your pots. Really important. And again, you might want to think differently when it comes to all the different aspects of your garden. So things that you've got growing in a greenhouse, well, that might dry out that little bit quicker on hot days. You might even consider just moistening the ground in your greenhouse every morning so that the humidity can stay high if you're having arid conditions as well as hot ones. Also, seedlings. Now, of course, when we think of our plants, our more established plants, they've got that additional root system, but they've also just got more biomass in the plant. So they're holding more moisture all the time. Seedlings can't go nearly as long in dry soil as an established plant, because it doesn't have the water retained within its body, within the body of the plant, to use. So seedlings obviously require more frequent watering as well. And again, it's all based around what the soil conditions are doing. So just check your soil conditions, become familiar with them, and learn from your mistakes. Don't be scared of making them. We all do. And that's how all of this knowledge gets accumulated. I don't mean by me, but I mean by our culture, our society, over thousands of years. You know, this knowledge has been accumulated solely from mistakes. And we might not always advertise our mistakes, but they're a huge part of what we do. So don't be scared of making them. Just try and learn from them. So that wraps up our four things to do before the end of July. To quickly run through them again, sew things, carry on sewing. Sowing now is really important to both extend your season, but also to give you plants that you're going to be eating in the winter and in the spring. Don't neglect these late sowings. Harvest regularly, particularly from those plants that will benefit from it, like your legumes and courgettes. Make sure that you understand what the plant is and how it works and why you're doing what you're doing. It's a really great way of learning your craft. Take some care over your fruit trees. Have a think about maybe thinning them and supporting any branches that are prone to collapse. And then finally, do some moisture management, however this looks. And this could look as simple as watering your plants, or it could be to mulch them, or it could be to do, so, you know, set up some kind of watering system. And that's going to be the topic of its own podcast over the next few weeks. Some low cost, low labor ways to water your garden and to keep it hydrated. That's going to wrap us up. Thanks ever so much for listening, everyone. I will just finish with another tiny bit of housekeeping that I probably should have put at the start, and that is to say, those of you who listen to the podcast and also follow me on YouTube, I've been doing regular live streams on YouTube, and the sort of regular day we've been doing them is Sundays. They've been going out at 12 noon Sundays UK time. This weekend I'm leading a foraging course on Sunday, so the YouTube live stream will be on Saturday, and I know a lot of you guys really enjoy them. I absolutely love them. They're the favorite video for me all week long, and you know, I wouldn't want anyone to be disappointed at missing it. So there you go, that'll be on Saturday at 12 noon UK time, and it'd be lovely to see you there. Thank you ever so much for your support of the show, however you choose to support it, and I will speak to you all really soon. Cheers. If you find this podcast valuable, there's several ways you can support it. The easiest of which is to rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts. You could also talk about it or share it wherever you post online, including your social media pages. And now you can support the podcast directly by becoming a patron at patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, we really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. See you soon.